awesome.
That was awesome.
You guys are awesome.
No.
You're awesome.
No, you are awesome.
Sir, you are awesome. Seriously.
Awesome. Awesome.
Awesome.
Everything is awesome.
Welcome to this week's edition of Everything is Awesome. I am your host, Kevin. This is a show where we sit down and talk to awesome people about awesome things. And I am so sorry that season two has had this large gap between the previous episode and this episode we're getting to right here. A combination of things, mainly my mental health, got in the way of me getting really into editing and stuff, which then led to more mental health issues when I just saw the pile of episodes I needed to edit grow and grow and grow. We're on the other end of it. I'm happy to report we're on the other end of it, and we're doing something special this week to celebrate Fan Expo 2024, kicking off this Friday, May 3rd, lasting through the weekend till May 5th. We are going to be doing a week of episode releases, celebrating, some folks who are going to be there, some folks who really represent the idealism of Fan Expo, and just some really, really cool and awesome conversations. If you're going to be at Fan Expo this weekend in Philadelphia at the Pennsylvania Convention Center, make sure you stop by and say hi. You'll be able to see me at a few different places. We're running the Philadelphia Podcasting Society and Creative Arts Alliance booth. You can find us in the community zone at booth CA509 in the community zone. Come check us out there. I am also going to be moderating three panels. So excited for this. The first is on May 4th. May the 4th be with you at 2:45 p.m. in room 125. 30 years of View Askew. That's right. 30 years since Clerks came out. I'll be sitting down and talking with my good buddy Garrett Smith, Craig. I'm going to pronounce his last name completely wrong. I'm sorry, buddy. Ligions. I think. He's the host of the Comic Book Gurus podcast. And Jennifer, again, I apologize, Kaminsky, I believe. And she's actually like really involved in the That Kevin Smith fan club. So I'm really excited for that panel. Later that day at 5:30 p.m. in room 120C, we'll be doing the Heroes in a Half Shell 40 Years of TMNT panel. I'll be joined by BK Mullen. He's a previous guest on the show. Michael D'Angelo, who you're about to listen to right here on this episode. And another previous guest, Jadzia Axelrod, author of Galaxy, the Prettiest Star. She just had a great run of Hulk Girl called Once Upon a Galaxy, if I remember that story arc correctly. And we're going to be sitting down and talking about 40 years of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. How cool is that? And then the next day, Sunday, May 5th at 1:45 p.m., we're going to be doing the Who You Gonna Call? 40 Years of Ghostbusters. I can't believe Ghostbusters is also turning 40 this year. Join me along with Daniel Colasicco, Dan Scully, previous guest of this show and host of I Like to Movie Movie, Michael D'Angelo once again, and again from the Comic Book Gurus podcast, Craig Ligions? Sorry, buddy. We will get that right in time for the panels. Very, very excited for Fan Expo. It's one of my favorite times of the year. So please, if you're going to be in Philadelphia for Fan Expo, come say hi. I'll be in those areas. I'll be throughout the con throughout the days, except for Friday night. I'm leaving around 5:30, 6 o'clock to go to a Phillies games. Ring the bell, baby. City Connects night. We have some awesome people covering the table for us when I can't be there. And Mike D'Angelo, who is joining me today on this episode of Everything is Awesome to finish out our best of 2023, what we are looking forward to 2024 episode series here. He joins me. He's going to be at Fan Expo as well. So if you're at Fan Expo and you want to get your hands on some Tellus books, on some Tellus art, on some nice wands that his wife makes, weird witch wands, fantastic things that you could buy from Mike. A children's book is also part of that wonderful lineup of products. He will be at booth A1404. So make sure you check him out. There he'll be also at my table once or twice to help me cover some things, but not for a long period of time, and then he'll be at two of those panels that we talked about. So I'm not going to delay you anymore. We've gone on long enough talking about Fan Expo, and I hope you're really in a geeky mood because we're going to get in on the other end here with my conversation with Mike D'Angelo as we talk about the things that we're looking forward to in 2024, some personal projects, and just some general games and TV shows that we're really looking forward to in the year 2024, right here on Everything Is Awesome, only on awesomepodcast.com. I don't know if this is going to be part of the actual show. So for those of the, for if you're listening and this is actually making the cut, what we're talking about right now is Fan Expo Philadelphia 2024, which would be, let's see, that is what the 20, did they do Fan Expo in 2021?
I don't recall, to be perfectly honest.
I know the last Wizard World was 2020. In 2019. No, in 2020.
Yeah, 2020, it would have been too late.
2020, everything stopped. And I don't know if they did 2021, and I don't know if I did that. I think I went to 2022 for sure.
I feel like 2021 people would have been, I mean, the people that I know would have been a little too nervous to go and do something like that.
I would have been on the fence for sure. Sure. I think what I did is maybe I applied for some panels and didn't get in, so I just said I wasn't going.
Yeah,
I think. And then 2022, I think we went, but I went very, very briefly, like literally went, did the panels and bounced. And then 2023 was last year. 2022 was the panel. That's when my Zoom, my original Zoom H6 died, and I lost the panels. Like they were just for that community there, but that was the year that the Kevin Smith crew View Askew were at Fan Expo. So yeah, we did a Kevin Smith panel. Yeah, we did a Kevin Smith one, and I think we did a Scream or horror panel, something like that. But I did two panels in one night, and that was my entirety of the con. And then we did last year. So this is probably going to be my third Fan Expo, maybe fourth.
Yeah.
I have applied for, as previously mentioned, if it made the cut, the Community Zone table, which is, that was such an awesome experience. It was a lot more work involved for me because it was the whole weekend I had to be there.
Right.
Versus just for the panels
that you were there for.
But I literally applied for the Community Zone table the day it was due, the day after. Same thing with the panels that I submitted. I submitted those late as well. So the fact that anything happened at Fan Expo last year is amazing. So
it happened for you, Kev.
Yeah, you know what? And at least, like, say what you will about like Wizard World and Fan Expo and like the kind of monopoly, for lack of a better term, that like exists in that world, it is run so much better than the Greater Philadelphia Comic Con ever was at Expo Center,
Greater Oaks.
Yeah
I personally knew whether or not I was going to that one or not. They didn't remember, they didn't get back to me until like a week before the show.
Fan Expo.
Yeah.
See, opposite experience for me. Maybe not when I did the panels in 2022, but I still had more notice on that than I did the first time we did Expo Center,
right?
In Greater Oaks.
I had a good experience with everything that we did at Greater Oaks, as far as setup, understanding where we were going to be, hearing back from them. It was not a profitable show by any means.
Right.
And that would be probably the reason that I wouldn't do it again, unless something happened on the back end that made us more, you know, had given us more of like an appeal or something like that. But Fan Expo, that first year that we applied for two tables, we never heard back. And it was just like one of the most annoying damn things.
Yeah, I certainly had. Even with that first year, the little amount of time that I was given by Fan Expo, I was more than the first year with Philly Comic Con, because Philly Comic Con, they never told me. Yeah. I literally happened to go on the site to be like, oh, let me just see what's going on.
Right. And your experiences are completely different than mine because you're right. doing panels versus a table.
Right. Yeah. So there is no money involved.
Yeah. Even if they would have told us, hey, you're up, it would have been too late because we didn't have time to order more product. So I I'm hoping for no shenanigans this year, you know, like we already paid. So right. I'm hoping that they're not like, yeah, we made a mistake. It is almost February and we still haven't heard much yet, but
just opened, I think, everything up. And a lot of the applications for media and panels and stuff are due like in April, which is again, kind of last minute. They do kind of wait until the last minute to like allow people to apply for stuff. I don't know how it is with vendors and whatnot. Actually, you know, that might not be true. The community center might be February 16th and same thing with, actually it might be mid February. Everything's due, which is actually better than last time. Last year was mid April and the show was in June.
Right.
This year it's, I think, mid February and the show is in May. So I think there's like an extra month
runway versus two.
Yeah.
I'll probably check in just to make sure that they still have everything on file. Cause again, I we spent a decent amount of money that I could have used elsewhere. Right. I would be very upset if that doesn't come out. And plus, I really want Rihanna's stuff on the floor.
Yeah, I think the wands will do extraordinary there.
Yeah, I agree.
But my perspective of Fan Expo 2023 was a great experience, and that was
it was a lot of fun.
I'm hoping, and I've gotten some really good feedback in, for those that don't know, I'm one of the, directors of the Philadelphia Podcasting Society and Creative Arts Alliance. I believe my official title is like community director or something like that. Community event director. And we had such a good time. What's that?
It said the director and a mayor.
Yes. But other than me having to be there a lot, which I did take on Saturday, at least a lot of breaks from being at the table, but, that was the toughest part. I got a good response in our private Facebook group, for the, Society and Creative Arts Alliance, that I think we're going to have, a diverse, set of people that are going to be part of our panels that we plan on putting on. And I think we got some positive feedback for people wanting to help man the tables. I'm trying to be, because this the PPSC AA. Yeah. Because the Creative Arts Alliance is kind of a, an expansion of the Podcast Society. Most of our members are podcasters. So I'm trying What's that?
It wasn't PPCaca before, was it?
Here's what happened with that original stuff that you and I both didn't. Well, maybe you caught it and I didn't get what you were saying when you did that. The initials were wrong in all the pamphlets that I had on the table.
Gotcha.
And that meant the website was wrong. The name was there. The Philadelphia Podcasting Society and Creative Arts Alliance was correct.
Right.
But, the website was PPSCCA.org and not CAA.org.
Which is the caca.
Yeah. So, so I'm hoping to have the table manned by like different, types of Creative Arts Alliance people. So like I'll handle the podcasting aspect of it. I'm hoping to have other people, writers, game designers, artists, stuff like that, help man the table as well, so that it's like kind of a well-rounded representation of what we're doing. And everyone will be responsible for like giving information about the group and like an overall of like, you know, yes, our main focus is podcasting, but then also like, here's what I'm here to represent. Like if you are able to help man the table, like you and Rihanna would be there to like represent, here's like the writing and like the artistic kind of
writing and crafting or something like
that. Right. Exactly. And parts of what we do in this group, And just giving like the baseline information that I leave for you for like the actual overall vision of the group and stuff. Plus with like any kind of luck, that fan expo will be a few weeks before a big event that we're planning that I'm not really ready to talk about because that's so in the not final phases at all. But that will be a great promotional spot for a potential event that we're hosting a few weeks later if everything comes together. At the con itself, kind of like this kind of leads into why we're doing a part three, like what our plans are for 2024. I know we were going to look at like, I think
TV most shows and games. TV and most anticipated games.
Right. So before we do that, I guess we might as well just talk about like our 2024 plans.
Right.
You and I are doing some things together that we'll get to in a second. I've gone over a lot of what we're doing. Or what I'm doing in 2024, which is podcast and community, creative arts community related. Mm-hmm. And at the expo, at Fan Expo, in addition to the community table that I'm hoping to get, it's not a guarantee, but we were there last year, so I'm pretty hopeful. Everyone like dug our table and everyone like dug why we were there.
Right.
I'm hoping to do, whether it's all going to be separate panels or they get kind of mingled in with one another. The idea is we have 1984, 40 years ago, 2024 is how I meant to start that sentence, is a huge year for pop culture.
Right.
Dare I say one of the biggest years for pop culture? In the sense that like a lot of things are turning 40 this year.
Right.
You know, a lot of popular franchises, and you know, we got Ghostbusters, we got Turtles, we got Gremlins, we got Nightmare on Elm Street, we got Terminator. There's so many that you and I discussed, and I have a list that even goes beyond what you threw down in our chat earlier today.
Yeah. Karate Kid.
Karate Kid. Yeah, there's just so much that came out in 1984 that there's, I think this is a probably like a huge anniversary for pop culture.
Yep.
Pop culture is not necessarily turning 40, but a large chunk.
Yeah, of pop culture. A lot of stuff from our childhood. If you're a millennial, there's a lot of big things happening that are 40 year anniversaries in this year.
Yeah. So I guess without giving it too much away, a lot of the panels that I apply for are very much in that vein, whether they are, you know, Ghostbusters, Turtles, a little bit more general stuff, a lot, you know, a live podcast on the creator stage, and then Clerks turns 30 this year. So it's not quite as old. But that's also a huge anniversary. So I'm looking to do something, for the second year in the last like 3 or 4 years, to do like a Kevin Smith type panel, at Fan Expo. So, you know, I think I'm ultimately going to be ending up like submitting like 4 or 5 panels, / live event things. And we'll see what happens. They're pretty good about making sure not one person is like talking too much. So we might combine some stuff, but
you know, it's kind of funny. For whatever reason, I decided to look up what turned 50 this year too. And Blazing Saddles, which we just watched last week.
And we just talked about this. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have a website up on my phone somewhere that goes over all the anniversaries in 2024, of like pop culture stuff. What like the largest section is 1984, 40 years old. It goes from like 10 years to 70 years. And as you go from 10 to 40, it gets larger and then it starts to get smaller again.
Right.
What blew my mind is this is the 10 year anniversary of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1. My mind.
It's weird because it feels like it should be older.
See, I don't. I feel like, and I understand there's a large gap. I know what you're saying. Like there is a large gap between 2 and 3. So like that does make sense. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, maybe it's because it's so good. I don't know.
Endgame was 10 years after Iron Man, right?
About something like that.
Right. I don't know. Like it feels like Endgame was so long ago. And it feels like Guardians was so like relatively new, like it was early on in the MCU. Yeah.
I mean, it really was. I mean, it was, I think it was phase two technically, but it was early on in the MCU's life. When you think about it from 2008 to now, yep. I think Infinity, and off the top of my head, I think Infinity War was 2018 and Endgame was 2019.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the end of that era of Marvel happened at the 10-11 year mark of the MCU.
Right.
2024, what else do I got going on? Podcasting is coming back, and at least with Everything Is Awesome, hopefully with at least one other show that I want to get off the ground. Writing has been big for me. I've slowed down over the last maybe week and a half, but the first
like map making and stuff too.
Well, I mean, I slowed down the writing when I started hitting that. I slowed down that map when I started doing podcasting stuff.
Right. Well, it's very hard to balance everything. And especially like my family is Rihanna and the dogs. You've got a whole.
Yeah. It's a circus. On. Yeah. I got like a, you know, at least enough for like a pickup game of basketball or something. But, if the dogs had a puzzle of thumbs, you know what? He can play better than Hades for sure. Maybe not Charlotte, but writing is big for me. I'm hoping to at least finish my first draft of my novel. And maybe making some headway into like, all right, like I know I'm going to be releasing in like 2025, something like that. But yeah, I'm hoping to do some stuff there with writing, and then also working with you on some like tabletop role playing compliment stuff.
Yep.
I might be doing one of those on my own because I think I don't want to say it out loud, but our two things that we both mentioned that are similar. I mean, the way I envision it, we'll likely be helping each other with those, but right. I think they're going to be fantasy and sci-fi. To have that, but the other one that I guess we got to really get cracking on, I don't know if we want to talk about it yet because we really don't.
There's other people with stuff like that out, so I don't have a problem with talking about all the things that we've got planned
without naming what it is, because I do want to keep the title
close
to the chest for now. It's like it's a critical hit and failure
card set
slash we'll also have a table so you can roll dice if you like to roll dice instead of picking random cards, but yeah, we're working on that as a joint effort for hopefully like March, I guess, is mm-hmm. March, April is like our goal
quarter,
there.
Quarter one.
Yeah, yeah. So that's like the joint project we're immediately working on.
Right.
I don't know that I have. I mean, that's like just all my like hobby slash creative endeavors. I'm sure there's a ton more, you know, with like family. I mean, I'm turning 40 this year myself. So,
so is the wife.
Yeah. Jen's turning 40 in literally 3 days, 4 days. Mm-hmm. But we're not, she doesn't really want to do anything too big for that. So, we're saving that for my douchebackery, of a 40th year birthday party. Though I'm even like, I'm starting to be on the fence about if I want to do anything super big or not. But yeah, I mean, creatively, that's kind of what I have going on. What are your plans that you want to share tell us?
I want to try and finish at least one big story, and I have a feeling that it'll be Rihanna's. I've got the Christmas story I just finished. Tomorrow it'll go live on the newsletter, and it'll let people know, hey, you can go to the Tellus website, here's where it is. That was tough because it was the first story without Peanut, right. And a lot of it had to deal with grief, and it was very personal grief. It wasn't like, hey, this character who I have no affiliation with,
right,
except being the creator of them, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
So that was tough, but that's done. It was 27,000 words. I didn't finish the story preceding that, which was the Halloween story. So now I'm circling back to that.
It's crazy to me that your short story for, I don't know if you even consider it a short story, but 27,000 words is half of NaNoWriMo or a little right. more than half.
Right.
Which to me is like, if NaNoWriMo is a novel around 50,000 words, like,
right.
that Christmas story is definitely a novella.
Yeah, I think that you could consider it a novella. I think 20,000 and above is a novella, and I think maybe like 10,000 to 20,000 you could in theory call a novelette or a right. or whatever. But I'm considering it a short story because it really is like, hey, we don't have, I mean, it does have an act 1, 2, and 3 right. and stuff like that, but
How long is it compared to the other Christmas stories?
I've had a couple that are like 32,000 stuff.
Oh,
like
really?
That. Yeah.
That's the norm for you.
Yeah, they're somewhat on the longer side. And you figure like last year, especially, it was we had Luna who was added to the family, and we try to have it so that each of the animals has their time to shine, and we try to like integrate maybe some of what we're doing that's brand new to us, like through the year into the story. Right. So like this year, big, like on the maps, big on the wands and stuff like that. Like Santa gets a wand that Rihanna made for him. And it ties into like everything. I think as far as like stories with like fun callbacks, this was one of the fun ones because we were able to like show stuff in the beginning and then kind of loop it back around. There was definitely some where it was like, let's just race through this and get it done. But I don't know. It was 27,000, not the longest, but definitely not the shortest either.
That's to me, like a short story is, I mean, the one that I kind of stopped working on like in the middle of is definitely longer than what I would consider a short story for yeah. myself. Like for me, a short story is 2 pages types. Like that's, I don't even consider
that flash fiction.
Yeah. Well, see, isn't flash fiction? See, to me, flash fiction in my head is like, oh, that's like take the Flash and Supergirl and make them kiss.
Like, that's fan fiction.
But oh, you know what it is? It's slash fiction is when you make them kiss. I think that's like the thing, right?
I think you're right. I think you're okay. right.
But flash fiction reminds me of that. So I'm like, no, there's no kissing involved.
Yeah. I think the way in my head that it all goes, it goes flash fiction, short story, novelette, novella, novel.
Yeah.
And then typically, if you wanted to, you could call something that was like, you know, over 300 pages. That's an epic or something along those lines.
I mean, Chuck Wendig is good for those. And he's a Bucks County guy, and he wrote the Aftermath trilogy in Star Wars. He's wrote some comic books. He's wrote a lot of other novels that are his own creation. And the ones that I've read most recently is The Wanderers and Wayward, which Wanderers came out in 2019 and was about a pandemic that was bat related.
There you go. Good job, Chuck.
But it was a really good, like it was like 800 pages. So good. Wayward was the sequel to it that came out in 2021, I believe, maybe 2022. Also very good. And it kind of wraps that story up in like life after a pandemic. Like the pandemic is much worse in that yeah. book than it is
post-dystopia.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's, very good books. And his newest book that I need to get is called Black Orchard River, which is about like some sort of like supernatural apple farm, really. Yeah, not the phone. Actual.
Okay.
Anyway, but Chuck Wendig, his like a lot of his novels are over 800 pages and yeah. like 6x like hardcover size. Which is, I think, bigger than 6x9.
Yeah.
So Christmas story wrapped up. You're going back to the Halloween story.
Right. And the Halloween story right now is 17,000 words. But I'm like very, very close to the end of it. It's weird because there's no solution. Like it's a magical phenomenon that appears out of nowhere and disappears out of nowhere. So it's good. It's definitely going to be something that like I return to at some point, but it's a weird Halloween story because it's this deadly phenomenon. I was thinking of kind of like, have you ever seen Creepshow 2?
No, I don't think
back in the day. So there was a story about like a bunch of like college kids that went to like a lake and they went onto like this raft and this weird tar stuff is in the lake and it starts to like pull them to their deaths and stuff like that. And that was kind of like how I thought of this. It was, you know, I don't think that there's any like thought process to it or anything like that. It's just this weird phenomenon. But I have Halloween stories where people die left and right. And this one is very tame. And it might've been because of what we were dealing with in like our real life. Right. And it was, let's take it back a step or something like that. But then after that story, the focus, at least for the first part of the year, is going to be on writing Rhianna's first novel. She's written short stories for the Telus universe in the past, but this will be her first novel. It ties into her wand making enterprise and everything like that. Technically it's a novel. Technically it's like a tiny anthology because it's like multiple stories within a story. Right. That's cool. It's going to introduce two fun new characters, technically three fun new characters to the Telus universe. And a lot of the time when we collaborate on something like that, her characters will end up finding their way into other Telus stories as we go. So, and if I have time after that, it'll actually be a Steel Tip story. That will be the next one on the agenda, but I don't know if I'm going to have that time. Outside of the writing stuff. So we do have our first project, which is going to be that Critical Hit and Critical Miss set of things that I'm trying to see if we can have ready for March. We're a month away from March 1.
Yeah. Yeah. I am going to be, I'll be looking at it.
Yeah. I mean, we know at least the basics. We only have 25 things to go before we're done with the Marshall class. And I would assume that technically that could be volume one and we could do a spell class later. I think as long as we get that figured out, that'll be nice and clean. In May, quarter two, I have a project for every quarter of this year as far as like what I'm trying to kickstart or something along those lines. I've been sitting on Quantum Quest Reinforcements for 5 years at this point.
Long time, for sure.
Yeah. And I think we probably would have done something with it last year at Fan Expo if we were able to go and play. But, you know, as we explained, I didn't find out until way late and I was not going to get people to buy tickets or anything if we weren't going to be able to have a presentation there. So what I'd like to try and do is maybe like a month beforehand, do a giveaway for some kind of tabletop game that maybe a lot of people like to get a lot of email addresses and then just try and get as many people as I can to have their attention on that screen when Kickstarter goes live for Reinforcements. And then at Fan Expo, be able to say, hey, we're live with it now. If you want to buy it, you know,
and another thing I think, especially since now you'll with that, the maps and at least our critical hit and failure thing, you'll have like 3-4, maybe more things by the time December rolls around. Maybe getting a table for Black Furnace Games / Starboard Media Publishing to host like just the games that you do at PAX Unplugged.
Right. Yeah. I don't know if we would do a table or if that would call for a booth or something like that, because
true. You know, yeah.
We could do a lot of different stuff, but I'm not sure. And then the other big thing is in quarter three, we had talked about doing a tabletop book of maps as well.
Yeah.
So I think that's going to be what I try and pull together for Q3. And it would just be probably like 32 maps in four zones. So it'd be like 8 forest maps, 8 mountain maps, 8 jungle maps, 8 wasteland maps or something along those lines.
Right.
And then if the response is good, I've got tons of other stuff too. So I've got enough maps to do 8 city maps, 8, you know, whatever.
And I know for a fact that I want to say I came across 2 tables at PAX Unplugged that were like map tables. And like one of them definitely sold out, had nothing left.
Right.
I think another one was very similar. Like, or maybe, you know, another one. Yeah, I think it was their physical stuff was completely sold out and you were able to maybe order it online or something.
Right.
So, you know, the maps alone, I think, would do very, very well at PAX Unplugged.
Yeah.
Especially if you have something physical.
Right.
And I didn't see anything as fancy as, and you know the guy, but the Kickstarter, the flat.
Yeah, light. Yeah. Tanner Yarrow, who had like the lie flat stuff. And I don't think that we would go that crazy. What I would like to do is, based on the research that I did and the publishing house that I want to use, we would have like Spiral Bound,
yeah,
and we would have Wet and Dry Erase,
yeah.
So you'd be able to have a marker and you'd be able to say, all right, like, you know, the map looks like this, but we're doing X, Y, and Z to say this thing showed up that wasn't on the actual right. map.
Yeah, that was Spiral Bound was all I saw
at right.
PAX Unplugged. Right. So I think
I can do that in an affordable way too, affordable to me and affordable to a customer.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the huge thing for me going into another thing I'm working on in 2024 is, like really kind of kickstarting the t-shirt part of my business. Doing it in a way where I want to work with, local artists first and foremost. So, you know, the greater Philadelphia area, I know for a fact that will eventually expand and it might expand right away, depending on how many artists I can find. Sometime in probably at this rate with us being what a third of the way through Q1, I'm probably saying Q3, I would like to go live with it, which is a good fiscal year thing, I guess.
Yeah.
But, where we have like a bunch of artists lined up so that like we have a year's worth of content and we can kind of keep on with that. But a lot of these t-shirt sites, in my opinion, if they're paying the artist what I think I can get them per shirt sold, they're charging a lot to the end customer.
Right.
And if it's a company that's doing something really inexpensive, the artist is not getting a lot of money. They're getting minimal. Right. So I have found a way to do like a very good balance of keeping, might be a little bit more than, you know, sites that rhyme with Featury and Fee or P Public. It might be shirts might be slightly more than their like featured design, which is usually super cheap, but it's cheaper than their like weekly or whatever their like normal costs are, right. And the designers are of the image are getting more money than some of them matching other ones.
Right.
So it's like a good deal for consumer and artist and me. Like I'm not making bank, but like, you know, everyone's kind of getting paid fairly or not having to pay an arm and a leg for a nice t-shirt.
Right.
So that's kind of like, that's the other 2024. I actually started looking at designs to kind of like do some, not private sales, but, not official Starboard Media t-shirts.
Right.
Anyway, that's that. I just, that reminded me when you said something about a fair price for everybody.
Right.
But yeah. And I think that like, you know, I think depending on what's like going live for you and me, I guess, come PAX Unplugged, you know, either a booth or, you know, a table, or it might be like, let's get, you know, Black Furnace Games is the distributor or whatever. So maybe you guys have you want to be the distributor. I don't know what you'd be, but you would be, maybe you guys have like the booth to showcase the games and
right.
Starboard Media
Publishing, like a developer booth or something like
right.
that.
Right. And then Starboard Media Publishing would have the table for like the sales and stuff, right. Which you see that, I mean, at PAX Unplugged, you see that a lot. You see that there's like, you know, oh, here's like the trash talk booth where we're like really advertising it. But if you want to, and like showcasing it and demoing it, but if you want to go and buy it, you have to go over here.
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. That's not uncommon at all.
Right. And I would especially assume if we were going to be doing something like that, like a booth might not be able to handle all our stuff by then, because you're going to have shirts. We're going to have, you know, it's going to be a little bit of everything, I would assume.
Right. That's another thing I didn't even think of. Like, we could have, you know, tie in shirts to all these games.
Right.
That are, you know, with like Quantum Quest, you have, you know, all that wonderful artwork that is both the, you know, pixelated, you know, throwback to the 16-bit stuff, and like actual art that kind of inspired that stuff.
Right. Right.
Same thing with, like, you know, you could probably do some fun stuff with maps if you wanted to, plus just like general, like general like
tabletop RPG artwork and stuff like that. Yeah. We have all like the mouse pads on Etsy.
Yeah. So like we could really like do some cool stuff at a, actual table that sells merchandise. Right. So that's something that honestly we should probably talk about within the next couple of weeks, once we once we wrap up our Q1 project, or not wrap it up, but, you know, yeah, that's put we're boring mileage. People. Yeah, yeah. Once we get mileage on it. All right. So it's your Q3 project, you said, is the map book, right?
Right. And then Q4 would be a return to the one that I just successfully kickstarted, my record setting Kickstarter in December of 2023. Maybe we would try and do it a little bit earlier, would be the 50 Maps of Tellest Volume 2. Because you figure we're already at today and yesterday, we're working on map 64. So only 36 away. And there's a lot of time to be able to work on that. I'm doing like two at a time sometimes. One of the things, so it's funny. The thing that slows me down is thinking to myself, oh, I can't do a map right now. I have to do it for the stream for one person, maybe. And usually it's Rihanna.
When it's two people, it's me.
Right. So I think I'm going to do some more stuff like on the side. And maybe what I would do is kind of show people, hey, I did this map. We're going to do a sequel to it.
Right.
Instead of, hey, I'm going to figure this all out from scratch right now. And bore people to tears because I'm still figuring it out and like mentally trying to piece it together.
Right. And like, and you can like, even if you start a map on your own, like, oh, I'll just continue working on it
right
in the stream. Though if you're listening, you need to get better. Something's wrong with your push notifications on iPhone, because if my phone screen is off, I don't get them at all.
Yeah.
Like it's when I turn the screen on that they suddenly come through. No other app does that to me. So
damn you, Twitch,
get on that.
But yeah, Q4, that's the last project that I have there. And then the only other thing that I have in 2024 that I really want to do is we've discovered that probably up to around like 6 or 7 people are enjoying the children's book that we released. And I think that I am going to try and look into maybe doing some public readings, whether that's at a kindergarten or a bookstore or something like that.
Libraries are great for that. Bookstores are good for that. Probably indie bookstores like Doylestown Bookshop.
I definitely want to look into them. And two of the people that we work with have an in with libraries somewhere. So I'm going to talk to them. Ellen and Gabrielle.
I want to do interview. I want to interview Arthur's there.
There you go. I'll have to figure out like the details there. Because Rihanna had said she wants to sell 1,000 books before she works on the sequel. Nobody knows about the book, and I've already sold like 50 of them.
You know what? I'm gonna that press list that I made for the thing that I'm working on later this year, or later this spring. It's just all a bunch of Philly newspapers and stuff. So certainly, like, I'm sure what you need is you need a press release.
Right.
If only there was a like marketing company that you knew the guy that kind of ran it.
What kind of place would that be?
StarboardMediaLLC.com.
There you go. I think certainly that would help. I mean, if that was the solution to everybody's problem, I'd be.
I think that's part like one part of the pro, like getting the press release, getting it out there, and then like actually having someone book events, which again, StarboardMediaLLC.com. We do public events.
Yeah, I'm gonna have you be my publicist.
Really. That's even though I guess I never really say that's what I am. That's kind of like we'll book your live event for you.
Right.
But I think that's having the press release. That's helpful because it's, and like even a press kit is super helpful for like media outlets.
Right.
So that's something that we should probably also talk
about. And I already have a template for making a press kit. So
perfect. We should probably talk off air about that for sure. Yeah, I think for me, I was planning on doing 4 Kickstarters like you this year as well to kind of like try to help bolster Starboard Media's revenue. But I don't know that that's going to happen now because I've reconfigured how I'm doing the books and stuff, and they won't be ready till next year. The thing we're working on is a joint project, so that's one of them. So that gives me more. If I knock out the writing, like I'm probably gonna end up trying to do 3, right, with a focus on our thing in Q1. And then I have like another supplement book that I want to work on for sci-fi stuff that I want to do, I think, ahead of my map project, my sci-fi map pack. So that's like the last things I'm trying to do. But as you, I'm spinning so many plates. I got to carefully set one down to get to the other one.
Yep. Oh yeah. The worst part is like, I know that you're like, hey, what's going on with our critical hit and miss stuff? And
right.
Kev, give me 2 seconds. I have to finish the Kickstarter stuff that I'm doing first.
Which is fine, because I have a million things too, right? So like I'm doing other things. So it's not like in fact, now you're waiting on me to a degree because I haven't looked at what you sent me.
Right. I do still have to do the add-ons. And I think next week is when I'm going to start doing the add-ons. And I only had like 13 people who did add-on content from the Kickstarter. But it's a lot of content because you figure it was like 23 books in the catalog, plus the fantasy writing prompts book. And I'm not going to dump it all on one day. So it's going to be like, all right, three books are going to come out this week. 3 books are going to come out this week. 3 books are going to come out this week, blah, 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 blah.
Right,
so it is a decent amount of stuff that I have to get ahead of.
And when you get that stuff out, just generic message, when you're done, leave a review. Every review helps.
Right.
Every 5-star review, Amazon, I think like Amazon, like when you hit 50 reviews, that's like,
yeah, something happens on the algorithm.
Yeah. You want to get 50 reviews. So, yep. And I mean, they aren't, I mean, I guess they did pay for the add-ons, but they're getting all these add-ons. They're going to read them.
They're getting it real cheap.
Right.
So
right.
Hopefully it appeals to them.
Yeah. And leave if you're not going to leave a 5-star review, don't even bother. I don't want to see it.
And I'm very cool about it. If you leave me a 5-star review, typically I'm going to go and give you a physical copy of the book. So
nice. All right. I think that wraps up our like personal 2024.
Yep.
Last episode in our part 2 conversation, we talked about films of 2024. If you want to hit games up, I know that's like big.
Yeah, we can do games. There's not a huge amount of games that I'm aware of. Just because like E3 hasn't happened, and usually people try, and E3 is not going to happen. E3 has been canceled permanently.
Oh, really?
They said they're not going to do it. That just, I guess COVID kind of knocked it on its butt too much. And then there's so much that can go wrong, I feel like, with that Nintendo started doing their own thing years ago. Sony started doing it like a year or two ago. And then I think Microsoft decided, hey, like we're going to take control of our content too. You know, it's just easier for us to distribute this to everybody. We can still do a live event, but we're not going to have it be something that's specific to E3 anymore. So the convention itself just it's not been renewed.
That's a shame. I feel like this is an opportunity, though, for us to find a way to make Philadelphia the spot.
The hub for
The hub for gaming to come and showcase like indie developers and shit.
There you go. All right, so let's get talking about games. There's a couple of games that have come out already that we'll just give a quick nod to. One of them was Prince of Persia: The Lost Crown.
Not gonna play it. No idea what that is.
It's a Metroidvania, and I'm a huge fan of Metroidvanias. It's done very well. I already played it and beat it. So it came out on like the 23rd or something. I can't remember when it came out, but it was so Prince of Persia is a game that's probably around 40 years old. And they've had a couple of different iterations of like reboots and everything like that. It's strangely enough, they've never done a Metroidvania. It's started off as a 2D side scroller. It's like one of the very first games where they did like rotoscoping to do like the art style. So what they typically did back in those days was if you were trying to make something look extra realistic, you were doing some kind of thing where you would rotoscope somebody's motions. And it's the same thing that they did with like Mortal Kombat, like 10 years later. So Prince of Persia was just like this diehard 2D game where every step you took, there was like a trap or something that was going to kill you. So a switch to a Metroidvania just makes the most sense. And they did it really, really well. Very frenetic combat, very cool puzzles and platforms, just very cool stuff. There was another game that just came out recently. It's not on anybody's list, and I don't know why, because it lit the internet on fire, and it was Palworld, which is Pokemon with guns and slavery.
Oh, yeah, you mentioned this at some point.
Yeah, Brianna has been playing the crap out of it, and is just everybody who plays it, I think, is just falling in love with it, because it's not really Pokemon, it's Minecraft with Pokemon in it. Okay. You know, it's the conceit is that, hey, they look an awful lot like Pokemon. And to some extent that might be correct, but like you're not doing turn-based battles. You're as the person who's playing, like you're able to beat the crap out of the Pokemon. You don't have to make your Pokemon hit their Pokemon or anything like that. So it is something that can kind of exist on its own. And I don't think that Game Freak is going to sue them. Again, the closest that you get is some of like the facial animations look very similar, and yes, there's like archetypes that they fulfill, but I don't think that it's going to be something that Game Freak is going to be able to sue them on. And you've got like your diehard Nintendo fans who are like, I can't believe, you know, people are doing this. Like, people have been doing that kind of stuff all the time. Every game at this point is almost always an iteration of something that's come before. So it shouldn't be that surprising to anybody. On the other hand, there's been some other crappy games that recently came out, like Suicide Squad, Kill the Justice League. They had a game-breaking bug on Steam where they had to actually roll it back yesterday and like take the game off the market, because it was instantly, as soon as you beat, like as soon as you play the game, you beat the game.
What?
It was absolutely ridiculous. And from my understanding, the pre-play things that people were able to play, like IGN and stuff like that, nobody likes this game. Like, it's one of the most, like, it's the people who did the Arkham games, to the best of my knowledge. It's Rocksteady.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't know how they dropped the ball this bad. It sounds like it's one of the least, like, enjoyable games in that IP.
That's why I went onto Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it, very briefly today. And the only thing I saw was, Terror Strong quote retweeting somebody about it, and I forget what she's, I think she was just like really kind of like, giving Kevin Conroy love. But the person she quote retweeted was like, oh, I love this game. And it's outside of what we talked about the other day, how it was like not great based off of what people were saying, what you just said.
Right.
I outside of our discussions, all I've seen is that one tweet that was like, oh, this is good.
Right. Which is not a good thing, unfortunately.
Well, but I also haven't been looking. I'm just saying I randomly opened it up and there it is. I don't even know if it's trending. Let's see. Right now on my, well, that's my For You. So let's see what, well, For You, it should be trending because I'm a fucking geek. So let's see. Ubisoft is trending, but not
Suicide Game. Squad. No. Yeah. There's a bunch of other good games that are coming out though. But again, like we discussed, this early in the year, like none of the back half of the year, a lot of people know about. But so some of the ones that are coming out very soon, Dragon's Dogma 2 comes out in March. And it's I never played the first one, but I know Rihanna got sucked in. And for Rihanna to get sucked into like an RPG game, like there's something that works there. It's right. something that appeals to people, and she usually plays a game forever. So Dragon's Dogma 2 is on my radar. There's another game that is coming out from Obsidian Entertainment, and they were the ones who made, I think, Outer Wilds or Outer Space. And they're the people who did Fallout 3 New Vegas. Okay. And they also made Grounded, which I had told you is like my favorite game of 2023.
I downloaded it, and it's
one step closer.
Yeah, I'm still playing as Dusk Falls, and by playing it, I haven't touched it in a week. But that's the game I'm currently playing as Dusk right. Falls, and I'll eventually move on to Grounded.
Right. So Grounded is very much like a survival, you know, game. It's like Minecraft on crack. It's kind of like a Valheim. For people who are listening to this, who know what that is. Avowed is a game that they're bringing out this year. That's kind of like their Skyrim. So it's, you know, a medieval RPG with guns and magic and stuff like that, that they've been talking about for a little while. It looks like it's going to be maybe a little bit less arcadey than Skyrim, but not by much. It's not going to be like super simulate-y or anything like that. So that looks like it'll be a fun one. They've got a new Princess Peach game that's coming out, which typically, if you're Nintendo and you're releasing something that's cutesy wootsy, it's going to be easy weezy as well. Right, so right. I'm not super excited for that, but
I've never been sold on the Mario games that are outside of Mario. Right. Yoshi, there was a Yoshi game that I think was kind of cool that I remember right. playing, but like if you're giving me a Mario game, but it stars Toad or it stars Princess Peach,
right?
I'm probably not going to like it.
So I will say Captain Toad was awesome because it wasn't a platform game. It was a puzzle game, and it was fun for what that was. There was a Princess Peach game that came out on the Game Boy Advance or the DS years and years ago, and that was very easy. The Kirby games are very, very easy. Like right. there's the appeal to Kirby is they, you know, they're fun to play for kids. And if you want to do like some exploration, there's like, right. the extra stuff that you can do there. The Yoshi games, depending on like what kind of game you're making, can be a little bit, you know,
I'm talking like Super Nintendo era. I remember a Yoshi game.
Yoshi's Island, which That's was it. Super Mario World 2, was fantastic. And that gave no disillusions of it being a simple or easy game. Yoshi's Island was a very hard game. If you like, you didn't know the techniques and everything. And even if you did, it was challenging enough where it was still fun. It wasn't yeah. like the stuff that you have now with Yoshi's Crafted World and Yoshi's Woolly World, where it's just the easiest damn thing that you've ever seen. And maybe like the exploration part of it is what like adds a little bit of challenge for an older player.
That's why I feel like realistically, if I'm playing a Mario game, that's not like Mario Kart, Mario Party or Smash Brothers, which I guess really isn't even a Mario game, but it's Nintendo, so I call it a Mario game. Like those side-scrolling platformer, I guess they're not even side-scrolling anymore, but you know what I mean. Those Mario games.
Well, I mean, they do have, like, Super Mario Wonder was a side-scroller for sure, but, yeah. like, an Odyssey is definitely not.
An Odyssey, wait, no, Odyssey, I didn't finish it, but I liked it.
Right, Odyssey was brilliant.
I did not like Galaxy. I was not a huge fan of Galaxy.
Yeah. Galaxy is different because it's not a flat plane. There's yeah. a lot of planetoids that you're on and everything like that. And the camera angles are very strange. Rihanna can't play it at all because it makes her dizzy. Yeah. I like them because they are different. And I think the 3D Marios typically will definitely try and do something a little different. And I'm still waiting. They had Super Mario 3D Land and Bowser's Fury on the Switch. Super Mario or Bowser's Fury is, I want that, but bigger for the next Mario game. It was one world and you kind of got like new techniques as you went. It was kind of like a mini Metroidvania where you would improve what Mario could do. You could learn new stuff. You could unlock things. And I really want that to be something where you've got the entirety of this little section of the Mushroom Kingdom that you're in, and you get to keep expanding the walls by, you know, getting, unlocking this power up being able to use that over here to get on top of that wall or something like that. Someone much smarter than me can make that work.
While we're on Nintendo, the rumor is Switch 2 is coming out this year.
Right. And what I would assume quarter three.
Yeah. What do you think that's going to look like? Is it literally just going to be like the newest version of the Switch? Because they tend to like innovate.
Right. So I think like every... I don't know, because it's tough, because the Wii was certainly just, hey, we've got these controllers. And the Wii U, while not marketed properly, and I don't think a lot of people enjoyed it, I thought the Wii U was spectacular. The idea that you could have a separate hub for and a separate HUD from what you had on the computer, like on the TV screen itself, made for so many cool things that, like, we're never going to get back to that because the taste is so bad in everybody's mouth from the Wii U. Right. But it breaks my heart because they had so many cool things that were like asymmetric gaming experiences because of that.
Yeah. Well, I remember, what was it? Zombie or whatever.
Yeah. Zombie U. They had like, you could go in and you could do your backpack. It took the map off the screen. It took the inventory off the screen. It did stuff where you could have four people who are playing with Wii remotes and this person who is doing like Game Master like stuff. Like the Super Nintendo Land stuff where it was Mario Pac-Man, basically, where it was this person was doing things on this screen that nobody else could see.
Yeah.
Just so many cool ideas that I think were never fully realized because they called it Wii U. And just people didn't know that it wasn't just a separate peripheral.
Right. I think that also now, because they do have like that Nintendo app that with certain games, it's not like a complete experience like that, but it is very much taking certain things off the screen and putting it onto a smaller screen.
Right.
And I think that if you're going to do something like that, I think that's probably the way to do it. Like, which is hard because if you're already holding a handheld gaming system, even if you're holding a controller and you're playing, you have it docked in, now you need another device. So I get what you're saying.
Well, and here's the problem. Like the Switch currently, and really any system could in theory do it, because if you've got the Switch controller and you've got the little Joy-Cons, all you need to do is release a peripheral that holds your phone. And then you've got the controllers that could slide into that. And all of a sudden you have a touchscreen enabled device, which like 70% of the people on this planet have. Right. And we're counting people in, you know, third world countries in that 70%. So almost everybody has the ability to have a touchscreen controller without using the touchscreen of the Switch itself.
Right.
So like those kind of experiences are ready for people, and for whatever reason, it's not there yet.
And you don't even need to do, like, you could even do, which I think it's called Backbone, where it's a controller that your phone docks into.
Right.
Nintendo could have that be like, for lack of a better term, we'll call it Nintendo Backbone or Switch Backbone or whatever. Right. And it's just like they have the separate controllers that you can buy that are like the pro controllers. You could have it where it's the Nintendo controllers on the left and right and your phone docks in, and that way you're not having like Joy-Con phone all docking into one device. It's just a device that your phone docks into. I'm curious to see, because here's what I dislike about Nintendo's when they move on from their previous generation system. Not like the OLED is, you know, obviously just like the slight upgrade, right? Like, so, but when they move on, they kind of like, when they went to Switch from the Wii U, which was the slight upgrade to the Wii, it completely left everything behind. Like,
all you didn't have disc-based content. Right. You just had the cartridges.
And all that shit I bought on Wii is now gone forever. Like, I spent a lot of money on Virtual Console.
Right. Well, your Virtual Console, if you still have those, if you still have a Wii or a Wii U, those are still available to you. You can still play them. You just can't go to the store anymore.
Right. But, and that's what I'm saying is like, it is like you're forcing me to keep a system when I'm buying a new system, which is fine. I'm not against that, but there should be a way for a virtual console. There should be a way for me to access that stuff I bought. There's no reason I can't be playing the after years that I purchased
right
on the Switch.
There's a reason. It's because they want more money. But the problem with it is they don't make it available. Like, the difference between Nintendo and I can't even say that, because the only one who says you can use everything that you've used before and they don't get enough credit for it is Microsoft. You can play just about every game on your Xbox Series X from the entire back catalog of Xbox. I think it even works on disc. You can bring an Xbox, original disc, and you can play it.
As long as they have, I don't know if every game is backward compatible, but like, they have been doing, I assume they still release backward compatible games.
I think they're done at this point. Their catalog is all the way.
Yeah. Complete. So then, and I think what happens is if you bring the disc over, it just becomes that it has to install the software digitally, but that disc is your key, I think.
Right.
Regardless. Yeah. Switch is my favorite system because it's on the go. Right. But I think my favorite overall system, which is so wild to me because I was so against getting an Xbox 360 back in the day, but is Xbox, is Microsoft. I was so against it.
Comfortable system.
Yeah. And like, honestly, like, I do want to get a PS5, but I also kind of want to get the updated Xbox. So, and I would lean more towards Xbox because the PS5 is literally for Spider-Man, right? So like, it's hard to justify that cost. It used to be for the show, because when I play, which is wild to me that like, I mainly play sports games. Like, I mainly play Madden. I mainly play NHL, and I mainly play the show. And for a long time, I was buying PlayStation consoles, whether it be the handheld or not, so that, or the main ones, so that I could play the show. And then the show is now on Xbox. So like, it's just Spider-Man that's holding me back from potentially, or that makes me want to buy a PS5, because really there's no other game that's just on PS5 that stands out to me as something that, oh, I need to buy a PS5.
There's like four or five games on the Sony catalog that I really enjoy. It's Spider-Man. It's Ghost of Tsushima was really good. Really, there's only like three, because the Horizon games are really good. Real quick, before we take a step too far from the Switch and the Switch 2, I'm trying to see if there was an article that I wrote, because I thought there was, about what I expected was going to happen with the Switch 2. And I thought that I put it on the That's Entertainment site, but I'm not seeing it. It would have been like at the end of last year, I thought.
I feel like the Switch 2... I think we're all just calling it Switch 2 because there's no other name to call it yet. Because I don't think it's, because if I had to guess, they're going to innovate in some way. And I don't really know how you innovate more than what they're already doing.
Like, so I think what they're going to do, based on what I read, there's going to be a forward facing camera on the Switch 2. The only reason that you would do that is, the DS had a forward-facing camera as well, and they had AR for it. But they didn't really go into it a crazy amount back then, because the DSi, you're talking about before the 3DS. You're talking like 10 years ago. Fairly untested, you know, AR back then. But I would assume now we've got games like Pokemon Go and things like that. What you could do is turn your Switch into an AR headset. So you could, in theory, walk around with the Switch 2 on your face and the controllers at your side, and you could play an enhanced version of Pokemon Go or any type of game that they're trying to sell you, or virtual reality, in a package that's much more affordable than a lot of other things. Because
that's the thing. I think you're right. Virtual reality would be the next step for them.
Right.
Despite Virtual Boy or whatever that was.
Well, they have a lot to make up for.
Yeah. That, I mean, that's the only thing I really think. And if that's, but in my opinion, like, in order to be successful as a Nintendo system, you can't just be an Oculus 2 or Meta 2 right. or whatever right. they call it.
Well, and if anything, it'll be a gimmick, because like all the stuff that made Switch the gimmick that it was like the weird stuff inside the controllers that like nobody used beyond like the first like five games that Nintendo released. Right. The portability is not a gimmick. It's what's seriously they're gonna have to lean into that forever and ever, I think.
I think so too, because that is and I think they need to stick with their current online platform. It's right. their, I mean, it's the Switch is the first time they had you paying for a membership, right? Right. Like Nintendo's right. never had that Xbox Live or right. PlayStation Live. Right.
And I think everybody likes it. Everybody hated the friend codes and everything like that. Like this yeah. is the way to go.
And what I like so much is that, and this isn't just a Nintendo thing, but it's these publishers / systems are really allowing the walls to be broken down a little bit, because as a fan, like a game we play as a family a lot is Fall Guys, but we play on two Switches and an Xbox,
right?
And we can all play together.
Yeah, cross platform is definitely a new thing within the last like generation and a half.
Yeah, and I think that's a wonderful thing, and really. What I envision the future of gaming being eventually is that there's going to be some sort of universal console that you have yeah. your Xbox service, you have your Nintendo service, you have your PlayStation service, yeah. and well, you're just cloud gaming everything.
The only thing that's keeping that from being a thing is Nintendo, because you've already got Xbox games on PC and PlayStation games on PC.
Right. Yeah, so. But I think what you need is because there's going to be at least people like me in our age range who are not going to. I won't do that. I will. Yeah. I will only game on the PC if I absolutely have to.
Right.
Even though I'm holding an Xbox controller, I'd rather be on my couch looking at my TV with my console. But if you told me that there was a Sony X
service
Switch,
or something,
a Sony X Switch box that I put on my entertainment center, and I can just download apps and pay, like I pay for Netflix, I pay, you know, $80 a year for Nintendo, I pay $15 a month for Xbox, whatever I pay for Sony, and then I just cloud game, and right. I'm assuming Sony has cloud gaming. I don't really know.
Right. Well, the first company I think that would push you towards that is Microsoft, because Microsoft already has some of their games on the Switch. They've got Cuphead. There's rumors that Hi-Fi Rush, the game that they shadow dropped last year, is going to go there. So it sounds like Microsoft knows that, like, if you're going to buy a system, you're going to buy it because you're comfortable with it. If you're going to buy a game, it might be because you're happy with it being on some other system that you're never going to get an Xbox console, but you might like their first party offerings.
Right.
You know, at this point, Microsoft is such a huge publisher that it makes sense for them to be like, yeah, like if you're not going to get it on the Xbox, you'll get it somewhere else. So
I also think that unless you can do it as well as Nintendo, and obviously Nintendo has, I think, some room for improvement, especially when it comes to these games like Xbox games and what's that space game that everyone was playing?
Starfield.
Because that I have to play through the cloud, and at least when I'm trying to stream it on my Xbox S, it is really choppy.
Yeah.
So it is a very intensive game that I don't know. Maybe I can play it on the cloud without having, if I'm not streaming, it's fine. But if you can get, if a Nintendo can improve the graphics of their handheld system and make it basically, I mean, this does it really well. Like I've played Xbox games on this thing and it's not terrible graphic wise. So like if Nintendo could really harness the power of their handheld device and make it and work with Microsoft, you're right. Microsoft would, because does Sony have a cloud service?
I feel like they do, or if it's not a cloud service, it's kind of like the early stuff that Microsoft did where it was like you can have your console on and then you could play elsewhere, because they just recently released something where you could drop controllers into a phone and play on your phone or something like that. So it's something like that. It didn't do nearly as well as Switch, but.
So I think if you do that, Nintendo could really, you know, especially since like I like their first party stuff.
Right. Well, and that's typically like if you are getting a Nintendo system, you're getting it for Mario, you're getting it for Zelda, you're getting it for Metroid, you're getting it for Donkey Kong. So that's the only reason, like, I don't ever see if Nintendo is not first party, I see them gone from the lexicon. It's not going to jump right to Sony or they're not going to pull a Sega. They're just going to be gone. They're going to take their money and run. But I don't think that they have to worry about that because now you've got Nintendo World.
Right.
Now you've got movies coming out. Like, Nintendo's okay. Like, they could drop the ball with the Switch 2 and they'd still be okay because they have so much money in the bank that they can keep on making these experimental mistakes and then come back and do something better.
But I really think that, like, I would love to see a Nintendo, because I just don't have faith in Microsoft and Sony to give me a device like the Switch,
right,
that is an enjoyable experience in my hand or docked.
Right.
What I think the future could be is if Nintendo invests in that hardware and then gets, you know, maybe they're the hardware company and they're doing their first party stuff, but like, hey, Microsoft, we're not asking for you to give me cartridges of those games.
Right. Let your
cloud service go to Nintendo hardware and eventually get Sony there too. I would be all, and I get that that's a hard sell for Microsoft and Sony because then you're saying, well, you don't need an Xbox anymore.
Right.
But,
and that might be like, Microsoft's clearly letting some of their games go, but not all of them. You know, like I would assume that for the next couple of years, you're going to be able to play Call of Duty on all three of the systems, but maybe in 5 years, Call of Duty is Microsoft only. And that's how they try and get people to go to Microsoft.
Yeah. I don't know. I think there's a lot. I'm really interested in what the Switch, I hope the Switch 2, if it's going to be VR enabled somehow, like the Meta Quest 2, I'm guessing it's going to have to be something kind of like what Sony did, where, okay, you have your Switch 2 console, which is a beefed up version of the OLED Switch, right? And then you have your Joy-Con controllers, and then you have your headset that is very much the as elaborate as the Meta Quest or whatever.
Right.
And then somehow that connects to your Switch. That's the only way I can see it working.
I feel like you could get away with making something, a peripheral that has a slot in it, like a Google Cardboard, where you drop the Switch in and it's like it's docking on your face mask instead of having an entirely different peripheral. The only thing that you would have to do is the device that you're dropping into has to be able to bend things around so that it looks like you're looking through both of your eyes separately instead of you're looking at one big screen. In theory, like, that could work, but like, in order to do it properly, there has to be some kind of like lens bending so that it looks like you're looking through two separate screens, one for each eye. You figure kind of like what they did with the 3DS, where it was like they had some kind of weird wonky thing that made it look 3D when you were looking at it.
Right.
I think that there's some possibility for them to be able to do something like that with a headset that doesn't do any processing on its own. But when you drop the Switch into it, it allows you to see things the way that a virtual reality headset would. So the headset itself can be relatively cheap. Whether it's a separate thing or not, you know, is to be, you know, described later. But the console itself is the thing that's doing all the processing.
Right. I'm just curious to see what they do, because I know that they tend to, like, when it's going to be a major upgrade, it's an innovative thing that they're trying to do. And you're right, VR seems like the last kind of VR/AR seems like kind of the last venture for them.
Their regular weird things.
Well, I was gonna say outside of what I suggested, where you have a device that's as powerful as the iPhone that will accept Switch cartridges and then potentially be your device that unifies gaming in some sort of way.
Right.
Whether it's Luna from Amazon or you know, I think my guess is Luna and Microsoft would be the two that buy in right away to saying we'll allow you to stream cloud gaming to the Switch Pro or whatever you want to call it.
I think the thing that we that you and I have been talking about, hey, Switch should do this or it should do this, the thing that Nintendo does routinely is think so far outside of the box that nobody really is figuring out what they're going to do. Mm-hmm. So they're going to drop something entirely unexpected.
Right. The fact that they said that you're going to have a dockable console where you can take it on the go, and the games, like, obviously the graphics might be, if you're playing Outer Worlds, I think is that game we talked about earlier. Mm-hmm. And you're playing it, you know, on the Switch versus Xbox, it's probably better graphics on the Xbox, if I had to guess.
Yeah, much. Yeah.
But if outside of that, like, that was so, like, no one I think expected that. Like,
no.
And
the fact that you can play The Witcher
and that's the other thing.
Harry Potter, and
that's the other thing, is that they opened up their catalog from, it's all still, I mean, there are games that aren't family friendly on there now,
right,
that you can get. So the fact that they kind of open up their catalog to allow more mature games, and it's portable, was such a game changer.
Right.
And I don't know that nothing will ever be as game changing as being portable. And you're right that you can't take that away. You can't say, here's our next console system, and guess what? It's at your TV and nowhere else, because you've already spoiled us.
Right.
And the only
thing that I could see them doing at some point is separating their pillars again. They could say, hey, we're going to do a console and we're going to do a handheld. But I think the only reason that they would do that is to try and chase money. And I think at this point, it would be a bad move to do it that way.
Right.
So I would assume that they're going to try and figure out a different way than to do that. I don't think that we're ever going to see a DS line or anything like that again. I have heard rumors that the Switch 2 or whatever might offer a second screen. I don't know if that's true or not. You know, there's all kinds of rumors that come out, and I don't know that they would pull that off. If it is going to be something like that, I would assume that one of those screens can be docked and you've got the other one. So at that point, you have the Wii U and the Switch, and it combines the best of both worlds.
Right. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what they do. And I'm assuming we'll probably hear something by summer or in summer or something.
Yeah. I would think probably by June, because at that point, most of the Switch games that they had announced are already caught up.
Right.
You know, it's like one or two or three games.
And I know it's almost an impossible ask from any of these companies now, but I think it's so important for it to be, especially because it's not a disc, right? It's this proprietary cartridge. Like, it needs to be backwards compatible, in my opinion. Like, it feels like you're doing such a disservice, or you need a way to be able to say, I own this game, let me download it onto this new system, and then I have the ownership that way.
Right.
Same thing with like I said earlier, their internet plan, or, you know, whatever you want to call it, expansion plan. That needs to be
on your next system. Don't make it so that all the games that I've been playing on my Switch, I can't play on my Switch too.
Right. And I think when it comes to like their online system, that's not an issue anymore, because you're not buying anything individually.
Right.
Here's
playing
the Nintendo
off this catalog that you guys have.
Right.
Now there have been like historically some licensing issues that they have, because in order for them to show that game, they have to pay the developer who made that game to allow that to be on their catalog.
Right.
But and if you talk to like Gabe Newell of Valve and Steam and everything, his whole thing is like, people are not going to pirate if you make a game available to them.
Right.
But if you keep on doing this kind of bullcrap where somebody can't play the game because it was available on this system, but now it's not, people are going to resort to that. And now more than ever, it's easy to do that kind of stuff.
I literally bought the Final Fantasy Pixel Remastered set, and I own all those games. Mm-hmm. I own all of them.
Yep.
But because it's just easier for me to play on the Switch, and I could play on my Super Nintendo. I have those older systems where I could play if I wanted to, or I have them on like the DS version or whatever. But the fact that I can have all six games, right? The only thing that they really, I feel like they neglected was After Years. And I don't know if it's just like a poorly received game. I fucking loved it because I love continuity like that.
Right.
That's the only thing I think they made a misstep when it comes to that game, is including that with the six games on remastered there.
Right.
But, yeah, I, I'm excited to see what happens with the Switch. I do think we should probably wrap up in the next 10 minutes or so. So are there any like big highlight games that you see that you want to go over before we look at the big highlight TV series?
Hades 2 is a game that I'm sure a lot of people are interested in. But I would assume that you've never played that. So we'll leave that and just, that'll be a real quick one. But there are two other games that are LucasArts, you know.
Oh, big. Indiana Jones looks good.
Indiana Jones looks very good. I think that there have been action adventure Indiana Jones games in the past, but I think predominantly it always worked in it as an adventure game. And I think there's enough adventure in this Indiana Jones game that it's going to be well received. There's puzzle elements. There's, you know, exploration elements. I think that it's going to do really well. And then the other one is Star Wars Outlaws, which I think is going to do pretty well as a Star Wars game.
Yeah, Outlaws is the open yep. world one, right? Yeah, I'm yep. excited for that one too.
Yep. And I mean, it's Ubisoft's engine, and like, I'm a big fan of the Far Cry games. I kind of tapered off with Avatar Frontiers of Pandora. It's a big game, and it was just at some point I wanted to play something else. Like, I was playing it for like 30 hours at that point. I wanted to explore elsewhere, but Avatar was a brilliant game. It was a big chunk of world building that like even the movies themselves felt like they weren't giving me. So I had a lot of fun with that, but I think Star Wars is going to be a very fun adventure, and it's going to do some cool stuff that you're not going to see elsewhere.
All right. So I'm going through the 35 most anticipated TV shows of 2024. Mr. and Mrs. Smith actually looks good. I'll probably check that out with Donald Glover and Maya Erskine. Just kind of scrolling through for something that,
I mean, Echo came out. That was okay. That wasn't terrible or anything. I'm excited for Abbott Elementary to come back. The Avatar, the Last Airbender series, I'm excited for.
Yeah, that's, I didn't realize it was live action. I probably won't watch it. I don't know. Yeah.
It's really good. You should watch the cartoon.
It's a shame that I fell off. Like, once Rick left The Walking Dead, I kind of fell off The Walking Dead. But his series, or his story, is coming to like a conclusion with The Walking Dead, The One Who Live, The right. Ones Who Live. That debuts very soon. I love Andrew Lincoln is amazing. So I am looking forward to that show. I probably won't watch it until next year when I'm caught up on The Walking Dead.
Right. Ghost Season 3 comes back.
I need to get on that show. I really love good. Rose MacGyver. It looks like a wonderful show.
She is related, also, I learned, to Rose Byrne now, because she married Rose Byrne's brother.
Oh, really?
Yep.
They are similar people, if I'm being honest.
That could be true. Cobra Kai comes back this year for their season finale, which is great because it's the 40th anniversary.
That's true. That is kind of a cool coincidence. I've not, to be honest, I mean, I'm sure I've watched The Karate Kid when I was a child, but no memory of it. And also, I have not watched one episode of Cobra Kai.
It is like one of my favorite series. I am so happy that they took that risk with a lesser known character.
Oh,
and
I think
it paid off a lot. Yeah,
I think that when you're revisiting the well of those kind of things, it's you either got to go like full like nostalgia and have the original cast, or you have to do something like that it's like, oh, this is original. Like, I actually prefer a mix where like I'm getting
legacy characters.
Yes, like I'm getting the sequel reboot or whatever they call it. Like, right. Where, like Scream 5 is a perfect example of Scream 5 and 6 is a perfect example of the kind of continuation of the story I like, where you are focusing on the new story, the new characters, but you bring those legacy characters in to support you.
There is a lovely blend in Cobra Kai because a lot of the focus is on, you know, Johnny and Daniel, but you definitely get the new actors. It would not have worked without the younger cast. Right. And they pull it together so very well. And the action sequences are spectacular. They have some fight sequences that rival the Daredevil hallway scenes.
That's nice. You know, what also kind of works in that sense is, which it obviously, I think it plays more into the legacy characters, but is Fuller House. Like Fuller House was a wonderful series that I really enjoyed. And it was, it did. I feel like it, like the new characters were there, but they weren't the focus. Like it, it was the original. It was the girls.
The original characters overshone the new characters.
But you know, I think really, because Full House seemed like it was the entire family, right? It wasn't just the guys that were the stars,
right?
But in Fuller House, it feels like that show was meant to tell the story of the girls,
right? I agree.
And not necessarily like a, like, let's just do Full House but with like gender swapping everything,
right?
It didn't feel like that's what it was. It felt like, let's tell the story of DJ and Stephanie, right? And
it
and
felt like Kimmy. Hey, let's see how they're doing.
Yeah. And then the legacy characters that we got were the guys that they just popped in here and there,
right?
And I think that was a great way to do it, where it was kind of a new story but with familiar characters the whole time.
With that same thought in mind, the Saved by the Bell reboot was the same way.
Did not watch it, and I'm so mad at myself. It's good though, right?
Because you didn't watch it, that's why they got canceled.
Damn it, I'm sorry. Yo, can you believe, if you want to feel old right now, Kelly Kapowski is 50 years old? You just turned 50,
right?
50 years. My first crush. Easily my first, it was either Kelly Kapowski or Kimberly the Pink Power Ranger. They are my first crushes. And Kelly Kapowski is 50 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Insane. Fantastic. Fine wine. Fallout. Not that I'm like a huge fan of the series. Like I've only played bits and pieces of Fallout 4, Fallout 3, and Fallout 76. But I'll watch the hell out of this show. That looks like the concept is great.
They look like they're going to do a good job with it.
Going through here.
There's the Umbrella Academy is coming back with its final season. So I'm excited for that.
God, I kind of want to, like, I started watching that, but I never really like jumped full. I think I finished the first season, but I never jumped in after that.
I had a lot of fun with it. I thought it was pretty good. I don't care about things like House of the Dragon season 2 or anything, but
let's see, I'm going through. Oh, Agatha comes out this year. Agatha Darkhold Diaries. That I'm so looking forward to that, which we kind of mentioned in our
Eyes of Wakanda also this year.
Yeah. Let's see. Oh, well, I don't know what this is, but it's Ewan McGregor is in it. A Gentleman in Moscow. So I'll be trying to watch that for sure because I love Obi-Wan Kenobi. let's see. Oh, Keira Knightley's in Black Doves. I don't know what that is, but I might check that out. I like Keira Knightley. Dark Matter. That sounds familiar. That's going to be on Apple TV.
I hope that Severance season 2 comes out this year.
Dune Prophecy. It's a prequel to Dune Part 1.
That's kind of cool.
It's going to be on Max. That makes me want to go watch Dune.
Knowing that there's a show that's leading into it.
Yeah. Like that's like it takes place 10,000 years in the past of Dune Part 1. Let's see. I'm just kind of going through these. I got a couple more handful. Star Wars: The Acolyte comes out this year.
There's a couple of Star Wars shows.
I'm looking forward to that because it's like very much focused on like the dark side and like the rise of the Sith, I believe. So
yeah.
Looking forward to that one for sure. Let's see. And that on this list is probably all I'm looking forward to. I'm sure there's a lot more out there, but that kind of, let's see, that was Bazaar. Yeah. HarpersBazaar.com's 35 most anticipated shows of 2024. And they're the ones that I'm looking forward to. Was Echo, did that Did that start in 2024?
Yeah, it started on the 9th of January.
Interesting. I'm going to watch that. I look forward to that. Oh, you know what I've been watching? After Midnight. I've only watched one episode or two.
Yeah, we actually are all caught up as of Friday last week, but I think there's been one more episode since then. And that's funny. She does a very good job as a host.
Yeah, it's an interesting concept for... I mean, listen, all it is Midnight, right? Or whatever it was called. At Midnight, it was called on Comedy Central. With he who shall not be named on this show, fucking Chris Hardwick.
I heard you name him.
No! We'll bleep that out. We'll bleep that out in post. But yeah, it's just At Midnight, right? But right. with Tracy Tomlinson as the host. And I watched the first... No, Taylor. I think I only watched one episode. Taylor Thomason. I only watched that one episode. Fantastic. I think she's very funny. Yeah.
And it's got a rotating cast of guests and everything.
Right.
And
yeah. Yeah. Well. I love late night television. So like, I'm a little sad to see that the Late Late Show isn't going to have its legacy continued. Cause I think she would have been wonderful in that role as well.
Yeah. Cause there's not a lot of talk television on this. It's like, 2 minutes of talk and then the rest is games.
Yeah, which is fine. I get it. I get that that's kind of, they're going for something different. I'm not sure why they didn't want to just replace James Corden because Ferguson was better. So if you're going to end that show on a high note, it should have been with Ferguson. Right. I think the whole concept of late night television is also changing. And I think very soon it's just going to be like, the big three on like the two Jimmys and Stephen Colbert. Myers.
Oh, okay.
I think eventually when Seth Meyers is ready to leave that show, I think late night will go away.
Speaking of the comedy shows and everything, did you hear that Jon Stewart is back on The Daily Show?
One day a week. Uh-huh. And then a rotating cast of hosts.
That is spectacular.
And it sounds like it will be up until Election Day, probably. Will be, I imagine, like Monday after Election Day will be his last episode.
Right.
Maybe it depends on how the election goes. Yeah. But
you see him killing himself live on air, I could see it if all goes wrong.
yeah, for sure. Now, I think, let's see, this is episode 5 of season 2 here, which is going to happen probably in March. So the special election of PA District 140 is done. I would like to say thank you all for voting. And as your new mayor of Levittown, we're going to ensure mental health is prioritized because we need it.
Yeah,
Bucks County is trending for the wrong reasons
today. You failed to stop that gentleman.
I am not the mayor yet. I'm not the mayor yet. MayorLevittown.com. Even though I'm already your mayor, there is a lot of great information. It's really geared towards PA elections, but I think the information, or at least some of the information, is kind of good for this, like the general idea of voting in this country. So MayorLevittown.com. It's a satirical site. There is no mayor of Levittown. Therefore, I am the mayor of Levittown, self-proclaimed. I turned it into a call to action. So learn how to vote, I guess is what I'm saying.
Learn how to vote,
do stuff. MayorLevittown.com. All right, Mike, I think we did it. I think we got it done in 3 parts.
I think so. You are very correct.
So, for one final time, where can people find you on the internet?
So you can find me on my website, Telus.com. You can find some of my premium digital stuff on Patreon.com/Telus. You can find some of my premium physical good stuff on Telus.etsy.com. You can find me on YouTube at YouTube.com/@WorldOfTelus. And you can find me on Twitch at Twitch.tv/ThatTelusGuy.
Man, it took you a while, but you've got that down. You've got that down now.
It's because when I'm closing it on Twitch, it's right there in front of my face. So like, it's just muscle memory at this point.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. Even like when it was in front of your face, when you first started your telestreams, you were stumbling. You got right. You're a broadcaster now.
Woo!
And as always, we'll kind of wrap up this show on the other end of our break, or whatever we do to segue from here to the end, with all my plugs. But MayorLevittown.com, at 30. I can't do it. MayorLevittown.com, at that nerdy Kev on every social media that I use except for Facebook. That's at that nerdy Kev 1984. See you next time. Thank you to Mike once again for joining me on this wonderful, wonderful show we call Everything is Awesome. We spent hours talking across three different recordings, three different episodes to talk about what we really loved in 2023 and what we were looking forward to in 2024. And obviously we talked about Fan Expo. What I really like that the timing of this all happens for a reason, right? Things happen for a reason. And we recorded this episode at the very beginning stages of me figuring out Fan Expo 2024. And now here I am releasing the episode and I know what we're doing. I'm getting ready for Fan Expo. I'm going crazy getting ready for Fan Expo. And it's just kind of a full circle moment right now. As I said at the top of the show, make sure you check out Mike and the Tellest / Weird Witch Wand Tables at A1404 in Artist Alley. He'll be there all weekend, May 3rd, 4th, and 5th. I'll be running that Philadelphia Podcasting Society and Creative Arts Alliance table. I'll be there off and on throughout the weekend. I will be there Friday from open to about 5:30, and I'll be there, I think, Sunday morning as well until the panel that I have to host that day. And then I'll be popping in and out throughout the rest of the day when I'm not busy doing cons and stuff. And by doing cons, I mean doing panels. But what a wonderful full circle moment. Another thing that happened in this episode that I really want to point out real, real quick. And this is the first time we're publicly talking about this, but that is Avatar: The Last Airbender. We mentioned it in the live action series that was dropping in 2024. And I had a throwaway line about, like, I probably won't watch that. And Mike said something, another throwaway line about, oh, it's based off a cartoon. I think you'd really like it. You should watch it. And I didn't know it at the time, and I think it was very shortly after this episode was recorded, maybe even after I hit stop recording, Mike suggested we watch it together and host a podcast. So that's what we've been doing for several months now, is we've been watching season one, book one of the animated series, Avatar: The Last Airbender. And we're going to be releasing a show called Avatar State Radio. And we haven't announced when yet, obviously, because this is the first time I'm publicly talking about it. And kind of, again, stars are aligning to where we're going to debut this show at Fan Expo Philadelphia. So Friday, May 3rd, we are going to be dropping a couple episodes of Avatar State Radio. We did episode zero, and then I believe episode one and two are really kind of part of a two-parter of the animated series. So all of that will be available on May 3rd, wherever you get your podcasts. And then I believe we're going to be releasing every Friday thereafter, at least until we're done watching season one, and then we're going to figure out our schedule after that. Here first, folks, Avatar State Radio. We'll be making a more bigger announcement on Friday at Fan Expo Philadelphia. So really excited for that. I have some other things in the works that we're going to be announcing at Fan Expo 2024. So make sure you come check me out in the community zone at CA509 at the Philadelphia Podcasting Society and Creative Arts Alliance booth. If I don't see you there, maybe I'll see you at one of our panels, View Askew, TMNT, and Ghostbusters. Really excited for all those things. Thank you all for listening. Thank you for being patient as we get ready to release this. And be sure to check out our feed daily for the rest of the week, because we're going to be dropping four more episodes this week to celebrate Fan Expo. We got at least one more guest here that is intimately involved with the convention. The other three, I think, embody what the convention is all about. So I'm really excited for you to listen to all those conversations. As I said at the end of the interview with Mike, you can find me. Actually, the best place to find me now is at that nerdy Kev. Nope. Well, that's still true on social media, but thatnerdykev.com. That website is up and running. Sign up for my newsletter. I'm dropping stuff in there for early announcements and stuff. And of course, you can always check me out at mayorofleviton.com, because why not keep politics on the top of our mind, because it is an election year, an important election year, but all elections are important. And remember that. All right. We'll catch you on the other side, which is tomorrow, right here with Everything is Awesome on awesomepodcast.com.